Morning, everybody. Matt Bobala with you on 720 WGN. Little Red Hot Chili Peppers for you there. That's Higher Ground that was played at the United Center tonight. Roger, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Doing good. Excellent. A little tired because I went to a concert tonight. I wasn't a good boy and, you know, went to bed and took a big nap.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Oh, my God. Tell me about it. I'm serious. Can't roll like I used to, Rog.
I know.
Sucks.
Been there, done that.
I mean, it sucks. When you start realizing that you are not the person you used to be.
Well, how long ago did you...
So defeating.
Did you, like, first get into Red Hot Chili Peppers? How many years ago?
Did I get into the Red Hot Chili Peppers? I am not a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. Okay. I like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy their music, and I enjoy the stuff that's on that you've heard on the radio.
Okay.
And I actually have their greatest hit CD. I don't know when I bought it. I've had it for years.
All right.
And so there's about 10 songs that I know pretty really well and really like a lot. And then they have a ton of other stuff that I don't know. My sister-in-law is a huge Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. So for Christmas, we got her and my brother-in-law tickets. So we all went tonight.
Oh, okay. Good.
And... Cool. I'm looking at their set list right now, and they played less than half of like their big hits.
Really?
I think so. I got to look back and see.
No encore to like catch up on the ones they didn't play like most bands do?
The encore, they played three songs. Only one of them was a hit.
Oh, I'll be a son of a gun. Oh.
It was very frustrating. Very frustrating.
We paid all this money for this?
Well, you know, and you feel bad because it's like... All right, I'm from the suburbs. I just need to hear the hit so I can get out of here.
Right.
Please. So I don't want to be that guy. But I'm sitting there like, you know, I don't know a ton of this. And it was a good concert. It was a good show. They had a very cool set and stage lighting show that went with it.
Right.
So that was really... So even the songs you didn't know, I still enjoyed the show.
Okay.
But when there's songs that you do know that you really like, that you really want to hear, and yet don't, very frustrating.
Yeah. I ran into that a couple of times over the past several years in Ravinia with some rock groups from back in my day where not that they didn't play the hits, but when they did play some of them, they rushed through them so quickly.
Really?
And played them nothing near what was on any of the albums or any live performances you heard from back in the day. It's like, well, why did you even show up?
That's so interesting, and I think for a lot of these bands, as they get older, you know, they have these hits, and this is what everybody pays the money to see. So I'm like, all right, we got to do this, but I've done this song 8,000 times. I don't even like it that much anymore.
Yeah.
We've made 8 albums since that song. Can I play a couple songs from that? And we're like, no, we didn't like those. We like that one.
Right.
You got to play that one.
Yeah.
And so maybe sometimes they're just like, fine, let's just do it. Let's just get this over with. and it's just not that great.
Yeah.
Maybe that happens.
Yeah. It's I could throw the CD in the player and have a better concert than what I paid and spent all that time for it. We don't go to Ravinia as much as we used to for a number of different reasons, but mainly because of the rock groups that they have up there.
You don't appreciate the bands that they're featuring as much anymore as you used
to. Yeah, I just really can't. And then you combine a whole bunch of other issues.
Well, you know, Raj, I'm going to say this. You can tease me that I'm getting older and can't swing like I used to, but I'm going to tell you, when you feel like you're getting a little too old for Ravinia, you're really in trouble.
I know.
That's a bad sign.
I know.
Ravinia, those bands are too young. I'm not going out there to hear that. Oh, that headbanging at Ravinia? Tony Bennett? My God, the man needs to slow down.
No, I'll go see Tony Bennett.
I know you will.
Yeah, you know, because he puts on a show like you wouldn't believe. It's amazing.
And he toured there a bunch of times with Lady Gaga.
Yes, he did.
Who is the next show I'm going to see? We're going to see Lady Gaga at Wrigley Field in August.
Oh, nice.
Tom Petty was just at Wrigley Field this week, and I'm very upset that I didn't go to that.
Well, you can't go to everything.
No, you can't.
You won't have time for living.
True. However, there's certain shows I'd really like to go to. Tom Petty.
Yeah.
I've seen him once. It was years ago, and I'd really like to see him. I think he is such an American classic.
Mm-hmm.
Has so many great songs.
Yeah.
I love going to shows where there are so many songs that I'm really excited to hear, and Tom Petty would be one of them. Red Hot Chili Peppers was kind of one of them, but they just didn't play a lot of them.
Yeah, right. So didn't turn out the way you expected it to.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't, it was still a good show, and I enjoyed it, but when there's a song you're hoping to hear, or a few songs you're hoping to hear, and you don't, you're kind of like, you know, that if it's on your greatest hits, maybe, right. You know.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Well, good. So, it got you out of the house.
Yes. It got me out of the house. Got me to miss my nap. And, in fact, the great part was we didn't leave the house until, let's see, we're supposed to meet them at 6. We left the house at 4:30 and got here around 7.
Yikes.
Yeah. And the funny part was we flew from West Dundee past O'Hare to like Harlem. Took us half an hour. The other 2 hours was like Harlem.
From Harlem in, yeah.
Yeah. Friday, 4th of July weekend, maybe not the time to be headed downtown. Yeah.
Traffic yesterday evening was really touch and go, really a good builder of stamina for people driving. Of course, I usually have a bad drive coming in on the outer drive.
Yeah.
Coming into work, especially when I get down to the Navy Pier area and try to turn off the drive, and it's packed with people walking. Yeah. Just packed. It was like a breeze. I thought I'd leave early tonight and because I thought it would be so packed.
Yeah.
And I walk in here, and David Jennings says, "Boy, you're in early." And I was. I was at least almost 45 minutes early.
Interesting.
Which was really weird.
Why do you think that was?
There was no traffic on the outer drive, and there was hardly any people walking around.
You think people are waiting to come down for fireworks, and so
could
that if they're coming down this weekend, they're going to come down later?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they got off early on Friday because it's kind of almost a four-day holiday weekend,
yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, that's true.
And they sort of probably got off early and said, you know, we're going to rest up and really do it right starting Saturday afternoon or whatever and just carry it all the way on through Tuesday.
So. All right, hold on. Bob wants to know what your issues are with Ravinia. Bob, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good. How are you, bud?
I bet I could guess what some of the issues are with you guys, with Roger, with Ravinia.
All right, go ahead.
I drive a cab in Highland Park, so I sit out in front of Ravinia waiting for fares.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed with a lot of the people, they come with their, like their carts, but they're like, the wagon.
Bring the wagon. Right, you got to bring a table and chairs.
Yeah.
They
bring like their dining room set.
Mm-hmm. Candelabras
and their wine and their cheeses. And they kind of have a tendency to take up quite an area. And some of the howdy towdies up there can be quite annoying. Is that one of the issues that you have?
Well, it's kind of an offshoot of that. I don't mind the spreads. Usually when we go, it's just my wife and I and two chairs and we don't mind just sitting on the edge between the walkway and the grass. And we usually have a nice area, but it's the fact that they're coming to have this great banquet and totally forgot that there's a musical program going on. And that's always been a concern with Ravinia. A lot of people have said they don't like going because they can't hear the music, even though they got a great sound system up there. But if you're out in the lawn area, the conversations tend to overpower the sound of the music at times. That's one concern. Other is the place on a good concert is packed. You sit there with your cab. You see how many cars coming in and out. It takes forever for the traffic to get moving.
Yes, it does. It's very difficult to get in and out of there. Yeah, that's for sure. I was over there the night that Common was there.
Oh,
and I just thought it was I didn't know how many people were in there, how filled or how empty it was, but it didn't seem like it was an area, you know, like Highland Park would be, you know, Ravinia would be a place that would attract a lot of people that were interested in listening to Common.
Hmm, interesting. But I bet you it was packed. That unfortunately causes many people, and we've done this over the later years, where we leave early just to try to beat the traffic.
So
you miss the last 20 minutes of the show because by the time you get all your stuff put together and start walking out to the parking lot,
Come on, let's get it all together. We're not going to hear the three greatest songs that we love because I got to beat the traffic. Let's go.
That's why I bring the CD with
Cook Road is all jammed with traffic. It takes you forever to get to to 41.
Yeah, well, we try going actually the other way. We take Green Bay Road, And yeah, and that's not bad. Really it's a little slower, but it's a nice quiet ride. So,
but guys, we know that Ravinia is like that.
Yeah.
So when I go to Ravinia, when we go to Ravinia, A, we use it the way Roger doesn't use it. We sit way back and we go with friends. We chat. We chat the whole night, and we only pick concerts that, in essence, are good background music in our opinion, because it's there and you hear it and it's great. But we're never sitting close enough to watch the video boards. We're never seeing the stage. So we just go far away. We set out our spread, and we enjoy, you know, getting to spend some time with friends. So for us, that's great. And then at the end, we just stay there till they kick us out. Literally. They're shooing us out of there. We sit and we hang out. We try to keep enjoying the food and drink for as long as we can. And then the little Ravinian scare, come on, you got to get out. You got to get out. Oh, okay. And then we really dawdle as much as we can. And then they use the washroom, and then we walk out, and then there's still a line for a bus, but it's not that bad. And then it takes us over back by the train station where we park.
So you like taking your time.
Build it in. Nice about that, in the neighborhood, there are the people that live around there that can actually listen to the concert right from their backyard, which is pretty cool.
I'm sure that's awesome. I think Steve Bertrand lives close enough that he just might be able to do that.
And I've got a college friend who I found out several years ago lives like two blocks away.
Why aren't you parking at their house?
Well, because we didn't know, and we haven't really been up there lately. So
yeah, well, next time.
Since I found, yeah, well, yeah.
What are college friends for?
But then again, I'm working on the weekends when most of the groups I want to see or the artists I want to see are performing.
Ravinia is pretty much all week long, aren't they?
Yeah, they do. But a lot of the groups that we wanted to see are on Friday nights and Saturday nights, unfortunately. So
yeah, they have a lot of orchestral stuff during the week.
Yeah.
And then they have the big names on the weekends, on the Fridays and the Saturdays. And the Beach Boys are going to be there on Sunday. I'm sure it's going to be mobbed over there on Sunday.
Yeah. Do the Beach Boys still bring a big crowd? Are there, how many actual Beach Boys are in the Beach Boys now?
I think there's only three.
Out of like seven originally?
Something like that. Six or seven. I think there's three that actually still tour and perform.
And Brian Wilson's not one of them, right?
Well, he has. He did a couple of years ago.
He is still with us.
He toured. Yeah.
Okay.
He toured a couple of years ago with them. I don't know if he's touring now. I'd have to check the Ravinia listing, see if he's with the group.
Yeah.
But that was one of the concerts, gosh, six, 7 years ago. Bridget and I went to the pavilion. We bought the seats.
You upgraded.
Yeah, we had to because it was such a great show. I just, for once, I had to see them like that and actually enjoy the music. And it was a blast. People were up in the aisle dancing. And
they sounded good.
Oh, fantastic.
The one I want to go to is Buddy Guy is up there.
Oh, yeah.
That should be a real good one.
I really want to go in January to Buddy Guy's Legends and see him play in his club. Because he does the residency in the winter, right? And he leaves like beginning of January every year, something like that.
He's not there that long?
He's only there for like a month and a half, I believe. Okay. And it's a hot ticket and it's hard to get. And you know he's not going to be around forever. So I really would like to go see him once too.
Yeah. We saw Ramsey Lewis, not in the pavilion, but he performed in the building at Ravinia. It was
nice.
Yeah, and it was like very intimate. And then he did a Q&A afterwards.
That's cool.
It was fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's we have our moments. But, all right. Yeah.
All right, Bob, thanks for checking in, buddy.
You guys have a good night.
You too, sir. Have a great morning. Thank you very much. 720 WGN, Matt Bubala with you. Roger's up in the newsroom. Jess is behind the glass, and we'll take your calls and texts throughout the night, 312-981-7200. Let's catch up on some spots. Then we got the news coming up on 720 WGN. WGN. Speaking of the romantics, we're thinking about, so we got the 4-day weekend here coming up, right? So, and we're taking a break from baseball for 4 days.
Okay.
No baseball, actually, for the next 4 days.
Nice.
Which is incredible. Jack has nothing. Boys have nothing. So we got to figure out, what are we going to do with the kids? We got to do something at some point with the kids. So we're thinking about, on Sunday, maybe going out to Naperville Rib Fest.
Ooh, ribs.
Right. And coming up, I don't know, is it Sunday? Maybe it's next week. I saw one of the days they have coming up. They have, who do they have playing there? They have the Romantics, who we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Flock of Seagulls.
Whoa.
it was like a trio of some serious 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Romantics, Flock of Seagulls. Ah! I can't think of the third
look
one.
Look it up.
We can look it up.
Where is it? The Rib Fest where?
Naperville Rib Fest.
Naperville Rib Fest.
Yeah. It's one of the days coming up. I think they have Collective Soul there on Sunday.
Music. Here we go. Naperville Rib Fest. Music. Toby Keith on the Navistar main stage. We've got Buckshot Bully.
Roger, when you do this, I like to, like, I'll say something, you're like, well, let's look it up. And then you look up and you read everything.
Here you go.
I like to think of we're, like, suddenly in the 40s and I called, like, the librarian.
Yeah.
And you're, I'm love like, libraries. Mr. Librarian, I have a question. Who do you think's playing Rip
It? Now, hold on a second. Let me pull up the card catalog.
Let's see. On Monday,
Romantics,
we have
A Flock of Seagulls, and the B-52s.
The B-52s. Now, that's a trio.
There you go.
The B-52s, A Flock of Seagulls, and the Romantics.
Isn't that something? And then the next night, Collective Soul.
So when is the B-52s, is that tonight? Is that Saturday?
That's Saturday. Romantics at 4, Seagulls at 6, beware, and B-52s at 8. Wow. That's like a whole day.
You could spend the whole day.
I know. And at 3.
Now, $25 admission for adults.
Okay.
Kids 11 and under free with a paying adult,
right,
which is perfect because the triplets don't turn 12 till next month.
Oh, sweet.
So I got that going for me.
And even before that, on the South Stage, 12:30, School of Rock, followed by the Millennials. There you go. Just a bunch of Millennials get up on stage.
Don't. They're just like, does somebody have a dollar? I don't understand why we're here on the stage. Why do we have to be here? Why are we looking at you? I don't know. Just give me something to eat. Just give me some money.
Well, there and then
I don't know what you want, but that's not how it's going to happen.
Well, that's good because at 3 o'clock is Nathan's hot dog eating contest.
Oh my God! Are we really expected to eat all the hot dogs? Are you going to cut them up? Are you going to put the ketchup on them? I have to take the whole hot dog and the bun, and I'm going to eat the whole thing. Please.
Oh, God.
Whatever.
Better Than Ezra. Remember them?
I do remember, like, a song from them, I think.
They only had a few songs, but they were not bad. They were in their time. They did okay there on on Monday.
So kind to them.
The Wallflowers also.
Now, that's
them.
Jacob Dylan's band, right?
The Wallflowers? Right. I believe so.
One Headlight. They had a couple of great songs.
Yeah. They've got some good stuff going on there.
Now, here's the debate I want to have real quick after the news. I need you listeners out here to jump in, because my sister-in-law and I had a debate about bands that know their place.
Huh?
Well, A Flock of Seagulls is playing Ribfest.
Right.
Okay? So that means they've accepted
I see what you're saying.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, we're playing Ribfest. It's cool.
They're making the rounds.
There's people that want to hear the music.
Yeah.
It might be at a Ribfest, but so what? They're paying us good money, and we're still playing music, and there's probably free ribs involved.
And it's a two-hour set, actually less, because you have to have time for the next band to set up.
Yeah.
And so they're playing their hits.
Playing 90 minutes, play the hits, get off, go have some ribs, and go back
Boom.
To the hotel.
Yeah.
And, you know, the groupies are a little older, and it's not as fun anymore, but we're making money still.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So I feel like they have accepted, you know, where they've gotten, and they're going to keep using it. And that's fine. That's fine. I think there's certain bands, I just personally feel this way, that have not accepted who they are. I want to, because I had an argument with my sister-in-law about this, so I want to talk to you about it. We're talking back to the 80s and who we're fans of, and there's somebody that she likes that I cannot hate anymore.
Oh.
Cannot hate anymore.
All right.
So I'll reveal who that is. After we check the news, it's 2:33 in the morning. Let's get the headlines now. Here's Roger. Roger, do you know who this is?
They need more cowbell, whoever it is. No, I was thinking it might have been one of the orchestral groups from
like
back in my day.
Electric Light Orchestra?
Even before that. Like the guy who did the theme to The Exorcist and Tubular Bells, that kind of thing.
That was Bon Jovi.
Oh, that was Bon Jovi.
Was that Dead or Alive, Jess? So it takes a while to get into that song, but that's Dead or Alive. So my sister-in-law Kate and I are having this debate tonight. We're at the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert, and we're talking about I don't know what we're talking. I guess concerts we've seen and who we like. And she mentions Bon Jovi, and I just get this look on my face. And she goes, I saw that look. And I said, I can't stand Bon Jovi. I hate Bon Jovi. I don't know why. I don't know what I have. I have some weird thing with John Bon Jovi that I just do not like him. And I do not like that band.
Is it the music or the person?
I don't know that I can pinpoint it exactly. He's never done anything that I know of publicly or privately or anything like that. I don't have a story about him.
Right.
I think the music's really cheesy. Oh. And so my sister-in-law, Kate, said, well, yeah. And I embraced my cheesy 80s hair bands like Def Leppard and Whitesnake and Skid Row. And I said, yes, I will agree. I like some Skid Row. I like a lot of Def Leppard. That was high school for me. I'll even like a little bit of Motley Crue. But they know they are 80s hair bands.
I got you.
And I don't think Bon Jovi has that feeling about himself or his band.
Well, he thinks he's still relevant, doesn't he?
I do think he thinks that, even though he's making cell phone commercials now or Comcast commercials, something like that, which I think, you know,
well,
you're giving
relevant.
Up a little bit if you're doing that. But I also think that, but Kate, my sister-in-law, thinks that, no, he knows that's what their band is, and he had big old hair back in the day, and he's cool with it. I said, no, he's cut his hair. He thinks he's serious. And I said, if there were two festivals going on, and one had, you know, Whitesnake and Def Leppard, and the other had Bruce Springsteen and Bob Seger, he would think Bon Jovi belongs over with Bruce Springsteen and Bob Seger.
Ooh.
That's just my personal feeling on John Bon Jovi, who I don't know at all. But I think that he thinks that they belong with Springsteen and not with these other 80s bands. And I totally think that they're... I just find it to be cheesy rock.
See, now I look at it a little differently. I look at it with the impact that the band had, the impact of the music on the time, the popularity of the music on the time. And I think that would, in my mind, determine whether they play a Rib Fest or Railroad Days, or if they play Wrigley Field or something like that.
Okay. All of those bands had success at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all the Rib Fest bands had some success.
Yeah, but they had, I don't know if they had the success or the lasting success and the impact of Bon Jovi.
Right, but he's not playing Rib Fest. He's not.
Right.
But neither is Guns N' Roses, okay?
Yeah, they had a pretty big impact, too.
They did.
Yeah.
And they still tour, and they do very well, and Bon Jovi would, too.
Yeah.
I'm talking about who they think they are. I think John Bon Jovi's got his nose up a little bit in the air about who his band is, and I think he's mistaken. Now, I'll grant you, yeah, they had a multitude of hits, so... Mm. Yeah, they would play bigger places than a Rib Fest because they've got more hits. They're going to play a bigger place. I'll agree with that. But when you say the impact they had.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but John Bon Jovi is not, it's not U2. It's not Tom Petty. It's not a band.
Oh, no,
had
no.
A true Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
I was just watching a little bit of, HBO does a great special on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And it's, I will say, it's getting a little interesting because they've inducted a lot of people.
Right.
So now they're kind of like, you know.
Second, third, fourth level.
Kind of like, you know, the second year of the Hall of Fame, we're already throwing Bertrand in. Kind of like, who's left, right? So at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year was Tupac Shakur, who died when he was 25.
Right, but had a big impact.
He had a big impact. Yeah. There's no doubt.
Major.
But boy, tough to throw somebody in who died at 25. Pearl Jam went in. Who else went in? Yes went in. Classic band from the 70s, right? So there were some big bands. Bon Jovi's probably eligible for the Rock and Roll. Yeah, well, Pearl Jam is.
Everybody's
Bon Jovi
eligible.
Certainly is.
Yeah.
Jess, will you look this up? Is Bon Jovi in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I don't think they are. I don't think they belong. Roger, your vote.
Ooh.
Bon Jovi in or out? Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
In.
Oh, come on. Why?
Why? I just told you. Their impact.
What is their impact?
Yes.
What is their impact? Record sales?
Whose
life was changed
popularity?
By Bon Jovi?
Life has to be changed.
Their impact was Aquanet. That was their impact.
What do you mean? That was their only impact?
Big hair. Yes. No. What? Wanted Dead or Alive? They made a song from a stupid movie? plays. How do you put them in? Thank God you're not on the panel.
Wow.
There are a lot of bands that I would put in that probably the panel would not put in. But then again, you know, that's my personal preference.
Who do you think deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall?
Well, I got
to
see who's not in there right now.
Just assume that your favorites are not in. Who would you say, you know, who ought to be in? They ought to be in.
How about, well, I got to look to see who's in already because I don't know if my groups are in. I don't pay that much attention.
Isn't in. Just assume your group isn't in and then we'll say, oh, yeah, they're in.
Sly and the Family Stone?
Just is Bon Jovi in?
He is not currently in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. One article says that he had a falling out with one of the people who is on the board.
Ah, see?
You know why? Because he said, why aren't I in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet?
Not why.
I'm John Bon Jovi.
That's why. Guaranteed, Raj. Now Raj is looking up who's in. I bet you $1 Sly and the Family Stone are in.
I don't know. Inductees. Well, that's 217. Wait a minute. Oh, all right. Maybe this is everybody. Oh, this is just two. All right. ABBA's in. All right. I can go with that. AC/DC, Aerosmith.
Okay.
Ahmet Erdogan, producer. Very influential. Al Green, yes, thank you.
There you go.
Alan Freed, yes. Albert King, Alice Cooper, Alan Toussaint.
We're just getting through the A's. Right
now. Yeah. No, So what did I just?
So you want Sly, so Sly. Get down to
all right,
the
so,
S.
But, wait a minute. Where's, Scroll. Oh, one of four. It's going to take me a second here. I got to go to next page.
It's like
next
the
page.
Library, just like I said.
Next page.
Oh, God.
I love the library. You know, when I was
I
in,
love it too.
When I was in junior high, I would go to the library and volunteer to help them. And I used to go in the back rooms and help with the books and stuff and put books on shelves. I was a geek. I was a geek. Please. Yeah, I knew the Dewey Decimal System for a while.
What's the really cheesy radio show everybody makes fun of? Is it Tradio or what's the old time where they call up and, hey, I got something. Do you got? And they like trade things on the radio.
Oh, the shoppers thing.
Is it called Tradio?
Oh, I don't know about you mean like currently?
I don't know. Not that long ago.
There used to be a lot of small community stations had what's called a trading post.
Trading
and people would call in and trade things for other things.
This is like our version of the trading post. I just say, Raj, I wonder what. And you say, well, hold on. Let's just. And you know what? This would be the best is if we had Tom Skilling doing it because he would sound so kind as he
thought. God, yes.
Oh, well, you know, Matt, I don't know. Let's look that up. Let me see. Let's see if Sly and the Family Stone are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I'm in the R's.
They are. They're really good.
Rod Stewart.
Let me look them up.
Run
DM.
Yep, Sly's in.
Told you.
Simon and Garfunkel, Shirelles. Do you know that my wife sang with the Shirelles?
She was a Shirelle? An honorary Shirelle?
An honorary Shirelle at a concert for one song, Soldier Boy.
How cool is that?
That's very cool. Yeah. Of course, I pushed her up on stage because she's very shy. And they said, we'll take three singers. Who would like to sing with us? You know the song. And they sang Soldier Boy. It was awesome.
That's pretty cool. All right, hold on. Chuck is on the line, 720 WJ. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, I got a real quick story. My son was a band for like 10 years. They played around different areas and stuff. And they got to open up for a band called The Fix in Hanover Park. They got a Hanover Fest.
The Fix.
And the band got there, and they were complaining because there wasn't steak meat and all this other stuff they said that was in their contract. And there was nobody there. 38 Special was there Friday night. Cheap Trick was there Saturday night. And so the guy was complaining. He goes, who's running this stuff? So I told the mayor, I go, hey, these guys are complaining. And the first two bands, there was hardly any food. There was just like a little bit of cheese and maybe some pop, and that was it. And these guys had this gigantic platter. And they were in the other side of the trailer. Anyway, so the guy started complaining at the mayor, and he goes, hey, he says, what am I going to tell the food vendors? He says, this place was packed. It was a sea of people for the last 2 days. He says, you're here. There's nobody here. It's a Sunday. And he says, the only people are here to see the band is this band here with these kids. So he went over and he grabbed a platter of food and then he took it and he gave it to my kid and the other kid's band. And the guy, they just stood there. They didn't know what to say. That was a band. They were really special, but they weren't.
These are the guys from The Fix?
Yeah, from The Fix. They're from England.
Had a hit, though, right?
One of the roadies stole one of my kid's guitar pedals later that
day. Jeez.
Yeah. Bad. But that was one of the stories. I just thought I want to tell you about the fix.
Well, I will say, if I'm in the fix and I got a contract that says you're going to have this here, then that's annoying, you know, because it was like getting paid. It's part of it. You're going to have food ready for the band before we take the stage. So I understand they're annoyed by that.
Well, the platter of food that they had there was beautiful. I mean, it was like roast beef, chicken, meat.
So they had plenty of food. It's just it wasn't the steak that they demanded.
He goes, where's the steak? Yeah, he said that.
I see.
The platter of food was like, it was like you would take to the White House. It was that nice.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So they got none of it. The fix. So you'd never buy a ticket to the fix, would you? Not that you would have necessarily otherwise, but now they're on your list.
Well, there was nobody there to see them. And as far as like Rib Fest you were talking about,
yeah,
I was at Rib Fest before. I saw Charlie Daniels at the Rib Fest.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right, Chuck. Thanks for checking in, bud.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great one. That was Chuck in Wisconsin, 312-981-7200. Tom Petty's in. Tom Petty should be in. Tom Petty
is
an American treasure. You know who's not?
Who?
John Bon Jovi. Not an American treasure.
Traffic's in. I love Traffic. Low, what is it? High-heeled sparks? No, low-heeled boys.
I don't know.
It's a long time. It's been a while.
Low-heeled, something like that.
The Who?
There's some heels involved.
Willie Dixon?
Well, of course.
Wilson Pickett? Yeah. The Ventures? Right. Oh, the Rascals. I love the Rascals.
Rodgers made it to the V's.
Yep, ZZ Top.
I believe the Fix is playing in Atlanta sometime mid-August.
Look at that.
If we want a road trip down and we could throw steaks at them from the crowd. Throw steak meat at them. Here's your steak, Fix! That'll show them. All right, so here are five songs. Five songs. Hold on, Raj.
All right.
Give you a little something here. Oh. I don't know. Do you know the Red Hot Chili Peppers at all, Roger?
No, actually. When they came out, no.
This is a song that I think really made them very popular. This was like 92.
They were inducted in 2012.
Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah.
So this huge hit, maybe one of their biggest hits ever, didn't play it. Didn't play it tonight.
They didn't play it.
No.
Well, because they probably figured, hey, it's on the CD. You don't need to hear it.
Great song called Scar Tissue. Didn't play it.
Boy, you got ripped off.
Scar Tissue that I wish you saw. Saw Captain Mr. Know-It-All.
Song called Soul to Squeeze. Which I believe was not on a Red Hot Chili Peppers album. It was on the soundtrack for the Coneheads movie.
What?
Yes. This was maybe the best part of the whole Coneheads
Nobody
movie.
Nobody saw that movie.
I didn't see that movie. But here's why, and this is a really good song, and here's why I love it so much.
All right.
So this song, I don't know if it's the year it was out, but 1994, I graduate from St. Mary's College in Winona, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to move to L.A. to become an actor.
Oh.
That's my plan.
Wow.
And so I have to save up to move. So that summer, I take a job at Tavern on the Oaks, which was a restaurant in River Oaks Mall. And I worked all summer long, saved up $3,000, moved out to L.A. That song was on like the in-house music, whatever, you know,
which
I think we actually had on carts that we put in. And so that played all summer long. And that's that summer to me. Oh. And it was a hit song for them. It's on their greatest hits album and they didn't play it. And there are two others.
I'd ask for my money back.
Can you imagine?
I would.
Could I just, you know, I just wanted to ask. They didn't have the steak for the fix and they got their money back. So I was just thinking, there's five songs I kind of got screwed on here.
I would have taken their CD and just thrown it at them.
Wait, Jess has breaking fix news. I'm sorry, Jess. Go live with this. Turn that microphone on.
The Fix with two X's. I looked it up on their website here. They're playing August 3rd in St. Charles at the Arcadia Theater. Never been there before.
Arcada Theater. Up north?
Roger.
Where'd you say?
St. Charles.
Yeah, St. Charles. Arcada Theater. Yeah, Ron Onesti's place.
All right.
Yeah.
The Fix. Let's name a song here. I'm in my head for some reason. I don't know if it's because we just mentioned Yes, but Lose Yourself. Lose Yourself.
Yes. Great drum beat at the beginning there. Yeah.
Is that The Fix?
That's The Fix.
You sure?
Positive.
How do you know that?
I don't know.
Let's
why don't you call
the librarian and he'll look it up. Hey, Raj, could you tell us what is The Fix's hit song? Well, let me check Dr. Google.
Dr. Google?
One thing leads to another.
Yeah?
That's The Fix?
That's The Fix.
Is Lose Yourself also The Fix, or is that Yes?
I'm looking. Oh, Lose Yourself is, you know what? You're right. It's Yes. What was the second one you said?
What was the one you said, Jess?
The Fix. One thing leads to another.
One thing leads to another.
Yeah, there you go.
You play a little bit, Raj? Go ahead.
Well, I can skip this ad in 3 seconds. Two, one. Skip ad.
We need steak in our trailer. We need steak in our trailer.
Yeah, so that's The Fix.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd run out to St. Charles to hear that.
There you go.
Jess, is there anything else by The Fix that we know?
Saved by Zero? I have no idea.
Oh, Saved by Zero. Sure, play Saved by Zero. Can you do that?
3. Oh, yeah. See, I never knew what the titles were. I just liked the music.
Saved by Zero.
Yeah, okay, that's enough of that.
I think those are going to be the two. Jess also mentioned The Sign of Fire and Red Skies, but I don't think we know those.
Yeah.
We got to take a break. We got to do the news. My favorite Martian, Sonja Van Meter, will be on the phone with us. She's a Democratic opposition researcher. President Trump actually spoke about going to space, and he's got space news. We'll talk to her about that. We'll just also talk to her about the politics in general. People, I will try to be nice. I know you're just going to bash on Trump for the next hour. That's not true. I'm sure I will a little bit. But we can bash on the other side as well. Let's have fun with it. 312-981-7200. Rogers News is next on 720 WGN. Hey, everybody. Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN. Phone issues here at my 720.
Uh-oh.
Trying to work on them.
You got light issues, too. I can't see you.
Because those LED lights they have in here.
Did you turn everything off?
I did. And normally Patty's not here tonight. She was in Springfield.
That's right. No lamps?
And so there's no lamps in here. And I'm too lazy to go take the lamps out of the green room and bring them in here. That's a Patty job.
Oh, okay.
Patty's got the, I don't know, the work ethic, I guess, to actually go move the lamps 10 feet. I don't.
So we're saying you're just
so
too
just
darn
do it
lazy.
In the dark. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Right. Well, use a flashlight or something down there.
No,
you?
I don't. I see everything.
Even the
fine.
Glow off of the audio board does. I can't even. Oh, I see some paper now. Okay.
Hi, Raj.
Hi.
Is it too dark? Can you actually not see me really?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, the camera one, I can barely see anything, like nothing.
No.
Camera two, that's the one over your left shoulder. That I can see because it's the glow from the board and the computers. Then the camera three, which are the guests sitting directly in front of you or across from you,
hello,
I can
library?
See.
Hello, library. Which cameras can Roger see in the studio? Well, let me see now. It looks like
I
over,
wait.
Over
have to look
shoulder.
In the under the seas in card catalog.
Do you miss the Dewey Decimal System, Roger?
I miss it.
They still use it, right?
Oh, of course they do.
But everything is so computerized now that I imagine there's not a
right.
lot of...
There's no card catalogs
they,
anymore. I would
how
spend
they categorize
hours.
Things, right?
God, yeah. Yeah, I used to have it pretty well memorized. And there's a major, library sciences, in order to be able to work in libraries. You have to have
is
that
there
education.
Really?
Yes. Yes, yes,
that's
yes.
That's crazy.
No, that's an actual college major, library sciences. You get certified.
I'd be hesitant to go that road. Or if my child said, well, I'm going to study to be a librarian, I'd say, yeah. Are those still going to be around?
And they're, well,
are we not going to cut funding for? I mean, I'd really be nervous about their long-term job security.
Sure. Because you can't just sit in a library and someone walk up and says, could you give me a, where's the books on the presidents? And you just go, eh, somewhere over there. You can't do that. You have to know exactly where they are.
You have to know like that, Roger.
I know. Because then the next question would be, if you're really
it's like being a veterinarian. Really.
Well, you need to
know. The doctor just needs to know the human. Veterinarian, dog, cat, rabbit, ferrets, mole, whatever. Yeah. Librarian, you got to know fiction, nonfiction. You gotta be able to go anywhere.
That's right.
Biography. Wham. Roger knows it.
Well, I used to.
This was 3 minutes we're killing while we fix our phone system so we could talk to Sonia. Sonia Van Meter is on the phone right now. Hey, Sonia, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being up so late. Did you stay up? Did you take a nap? What did you do?
I cannot reveal my secret. It's a trade secret.
She's hammered. She's been up drinking. Okay. Her Twitter handle is Bourbon Face. If that tells you anything, our good friend Sonia Van Meter, who we haven't talked to. Sonia, we haven't talked to you in forever. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know what? For a Democrat living in the Trump era, I feel like Bourbon Face is the only appropriate handle to have.
A Democrat living in the Trump era who lives in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But you do live, you are in Austin at least, right?
I am. I'm in the very best of Texas.
Austin is like the green zone, like Iraq. There's places you can be and survive. For a Democrat, you have to live in Austin if you live in Texas, I think is the rule, right?
Well, Austin and Houston and Dallas are starting to show signs of resistance life. Mm-hmm. Hillary made some interesting gains in the areas around Houston and Dallas in this last election that we were not expecting, especially given that she didn't spend a lot of money here. So, yeah, signs of life.
Okay. All right. So in a little while, not right now, because I do want to talk to you, because we always talk about space, because I first met you because there were stories about you as possibly being one of the first Martians. And are you outside? Are you actually outside right now?
I am, man. It's a beautiful night.
You're like, for a walk in the neighborhood, you know? It's 3 a.m. It's all right. All right, so we'll come back to the space stuff in a little bit. But I've never really talked to you about your real life that much. So for a job, you are an oppo researcher, right? You do opposition research for candidates?
I do. That is exactly what I do.
So does that mean that I'm running for office and you're doing research on me for what everybody might dig up on me, or you're working for me and then whoever my opponent is, you're trying to do the digging up? Which is it? Or is it both?
I do both, actually. We call it self-research when we're doing research on our own clients.
Okay.
The people that we're working for, and then it's opposition research, obviously, when we're working on your opponents. But it's all the same process.
Is one more important than the other? Is it more important to know what could come out against yourself, or more important to know what you can use to your advantage over your opponent?
They're both important, but I don't really like working for candidates who aren't interested in doing the deep dive on themselves, because no matter what you hurl at other people, if you're not prepared for what's coming at you, what is that line? The best offense is a strong defense, or the best defense is a strong offense. It's sort of along those lines. If you don't know yourself, if you don't know your vulnerabilities, you're going to be easily sunk in a campaign. So
it's interesting. So you said, I don't like working for a candidate who doesn't want to do the research on themselves. Do you find that the candidates who don't want to do the research on themselves probably have something pretty big to hide?
It's not that they have something to hide. It's that they feel like they know themselves. You know, that's a perfectly legitimate experience. You know, we all think that we know what we have done in our life. The problem is that our memories are fallible. We have a way of sort of glorifying the things that we like about ourselves while sort of diminishing the things that we aren't especially proud of.
Interesting.
It's also a question of third-party perspective. I mean, like, it is one thing to know yourself. It is entirely another to see all the material that is available on you and figure out how someone who doesn't know you is going to interpret it. So
yeah.
That's why you hire me.
Yeah, I wonder, when you're finding research on when you're doing the self-research, are you finding that there's things that they're like, wait a minute, I forgot that, or I didn't remember that? Or it's more, yeah, I know that, but that's not a big deal. And you're like, well, in other people's hands, it's going to be a much bigger deal than you think.
Matt, I've had to tell people about live arrest warrants for them.
That they didn't know were out there, or they didn't think you'd find out about?
That they didn't know were out there. They had no idea.
Wow, that's...
It's amazing. It's amazing some of the things that you will find. Yeah.
That must be an interesting meeting. Mr. Future Mayor, here's the thing. They're looking to arrest you, so you really got to clear that up before we move it forward with this. Live arrest warrants. That had to have caught them by surprise, I would think.
A little bit. And it's usually something silly, like you forgot to pay a speeding ticket
right.
that you got in a county, you know, six counties away from you that you just happen to be passing through one day. And these are the kind of things, this is why you hire an opposition researcher, because you never know what's going to come up.
I imagine. Now, I don't expect you to reveal any names or anything like that or tell anything that, you know, I'm sure there's a bit of a doctor-patient confidentiality here, right? But
always.
Have you ever done the research, come to the candidate and said, okay, here's what we found, and they said, okay, well, didn't expect that, and now I have to drop out? I mean, do you ever go to somebody and say, there's no way you're going to win when we found out this about you?
Actually, yes, and it's happened both ways. We've had people, we've done the self-research on them, and it wasn't necessarily what we found. It's that they didn't realize just how much there was going to be and didn't want to put sort of their family through that kind of thing. We've also done research on opponents, dropped just a little bit of that information to like a reporter, and they've dropped out.
Because that's they think, okay, if they found out that there's a lot more that there could be, probably?
Sometimes it's that. Sometimes they just realize, oh, wait, this is going to be something that I don't necessarily want other people knowing about me, and they just sort of politely bow out. Sorry, I get it. You take this. It's fine. I'll just exit quietly.
You know what's interesting, Sonia, is I like you a lot. I think you're a really nice person, and I've loved talking to you over the years. You could see where, and you're like, okay, here comes the butt. You could see where, as we're having this conversation, there would be people thinking, and I'm wondering if we should be thinking, work like this is the problem with politics, right? Because we're looking into, now this is where you look into the opponent and see what they have going on in their personal life, and that's why they have to get out or they end up being kind of run out of politics. And maybe they're a good person who's made mistakes or whatever. Do you ever worry about, you know, because we worry and we've talked about it. We don't talk about it right now because things have gone so off the rails that this is like small potatoes, I think, and we're so past that. But let's go to a quaint era like 30 years ago where, you know, let's go back to what's his name and his monkey ship with the woman he dared the press to find. Who was that? Gary Hart? With like a time like that where then people would say, oh, this is the politics of destruction or this and that, where we're just looking to smear people. And that's why nobody good goes into this anymore. Do you think about that at all? Or do you think is that irrelevant? Because listen, if you're hiding something, you're hiding something, and it's a politician, they are here to represent us. We should know as much as we can about them.
So I hear you completely. And certainly in this era of Donald Trump, when, you know, everything makes for great clickbait, there seems to be more and more of what people call opposition research in the media. But here's the thing about what I do. I am only interested in publicly available records. I am not going through your trash. I am not taking pictures through your windows at night. I am not outing your gay child. The stuff that I am looking at, society already agrees, should be a matter of public record. Things like your criminal history, civil court cases. You know, do you have liens with the IRS? And the reason that these things we all agree are publicly available is because these are things that indicate character and also what your habits will be like once you're in office. I'm not especially interested in the fact that Donald Trump has, you know, half a dozen children with three different women, all of whom he cheated on. I am interested in who is the Supreme Court nominee he's going to push. These are things that are relevant to voters. And opposition research is about the stuff that is going to be relevant to the voters. We're not so much interested in the sleazy stuff and the slimy stuff. We are interested in the patterns, though. And demonstrating the patterns is a huge part of how opposition researchers help society decide who to vote for. You know, are you looking for a fiscal conservative or a social conservative? How does this person vote on these issues? What has this person said about these issues? It's not necessarily about destroying the candidate. It's about helping voters understand who they are better. We like to consider ourselves, you know, the people holding politicians accountable. And now if it happens that you have done something, you know, exorbitantly shady or immoral in your life, yes, I would like to be able to find that and demonstrate it to the public so that they know who they're voting for when they cast a vote for you. But at the end of the day, it's about drawing comparisons. It's not necessarily about destroying careers.
So is your job much easier when it's been somebody who's been around for a long time, who's, you know, as we've seen with the presidential candidates over recent years, when somebody has been in the Senate a long time, been had to vote on a lot of different things. Now there's a lot of different things to say, well, he voted on this, and so you can use that, or things like that, versus somebody who's brand new to politics who doesn't have a big voting record. That must make your job tougher, I would think.
Well, it depends, to be quite honest. I mean, obviously, if you've got somebody like Bob Dole or Strom Thurmond, who's been in office for 150 years, there's plenty of material to draw from. But somebody like Donald Trump, who has never spent, you know, but before he ran for president, hadn't ever been a public figure, at least in public office, there was plenty of material on him, you know. Now, obviously, he's not someone that you want to necessarily model your plans after. But, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, public figures, when they decide they want to go into office, you know, sometimes their experience isn't necessarily in politics, but in business, or in the nonprofit world, or, you know, they're a lawyer and they have a huge legal history, or a law firm that they've been with for a long time. It depends on the candidate. Not everyone has a huge political history, but that doesn't mean that, you know, especially with the advent of social media, you know, there's yeah. usually something to find on people these days.
Do you, so since we're talking about Trump right now, with what happened there, did you know, he didn't have a big voting record, but he's been a public figure forever. He's talked about politics, tweeted about politics nonstop for the last 5 or 6 years. So there was a lot there. But no matter what he did, he still won. And it's amazing yep. that no matter what he said, and he himself said, I could shoot somebody, people would still vote for me. And he was, it seems right. Because no matter what he did, he still won the election. So when you look back at that now, this many months later, did Trump win the election or did Hillary lose the election?
It's a little bit of both. And you know, full disclosure, I'm a huge Hillary supporter.
Sure.
But she has admitted, you know, mistakes were made. But one thing that I kind of like to remind people, were it for 90,000 votes across, you know, a handful of counties in three states all told, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know, she, you know, it, electorally, it was a big margin because of the way the Electoral College is set up and the, sure. and the way that votes are counted for each state. But it, numerically, she won the popular vote. You know, like more Americans wanted her than Donald Trump.
Right.
So, you know, there were some logistical problems in terms of where she decided to do a lot of her messaging, you know, where her voter, her get out the vote operation was strongest. You know, a lot of her get out the votes effort was concentrated on registering new voters as opposed to communicating with existing voters. In short, you know, she had some bad models. She was working with some bad models. And then also, Donald Trump was the most non-traditional candidate we had ever seen.
Sure.
She was treated in the media as a serious candidate. Her record was scrutinized. She was, you know, they called the balls and strikes on her time in the U.S. Senate and her time as Secretary of State. Donald Trump was treated as a sideshow act. You know, the media couldn't get enough of him. And this, I do not blame the media. I mean, he was a bright, shining meteor across the sky. I mean, every time he opened up his mouth, he was saying something so outrageous and so ridiculous that, of course, the media was going to cover everything he said, and not especially cover, you know, whether or not he was well equipped for this job.
Right.
And again, cannot say this enough. I don't necessarily blame the media. He was an attraction. You know, he was crazy. He was interesting.
And I do think we overcovered him like crazy. And we talked about this here before. I was filling in one night. When he came back from Mexico, that day he came back from Mexico, he was holding a press conference that night, I think, in Arizona about the wall and mm-hmm. stuff. And we carried yeah. it live. And we debated here, if Hillary was giving this speech, we wouldn't carry it live. So why are we carrying this live? And we ended up saying, because we don't know what he's going to say, and it is newsworthy, mm-hmm. and this is different. So we carried yep. it. So I do agree with that. But I also think that the media also beat the hell out of him a lot on the lawsuits and everything. I mean, those tapes come out, so much stuff. Negative also came out there. I felt like for the first 8 months of the campaign, he got all the free everything. And the last couple months leading up to the election, it seems like every other story was a negative story that was coming out about him. So there was a lot of that, too.
For sure. But here was the difference. Donald Trump has absolutely no shame. When you expose unpleasant and difficult stories about other politicians, they have the good sense to show just the slightest bit of remorse. this guy basically extended a gigantic middle finger to America and said, I do what I want. And for some reason, that resonated with a lot of voters because it comes across as power and strength and authority. And that is not something that wasn't Hillary's strong suit. Those were not characteristics that she was playing to.
And that, quite frankly, a woman maybe wouldn't get away with like a man did yet. I think we're still not there yet, right?
Yeah, certainly not. And after 8 years of Obama, which is incredibly measured and reasoned rhetoric, always trying to be the brainiac in the room, the guy who gets everyone's input before he makes a decision. You know, I think you know, Middle America was kind of ready for a guy with some balls. You know, so in hindsight, I mean, it's really easy to say this in hindsight, 2020, of course. It's easy to understand, you know, where Donald Trump came from and how he was able to pull this off. But, you know, it's hard to see it when it's happened in 2 years.
Yeah. And it actually worked for him. So there's that. And how has that changed candidates since then, candidates you've worked with since he won? Now, I know you're working probably exclusively with Democrats, so maybe it's not changed things for them. But I wonder, though, if people aren't saying, you say, well, you know, if this happens, you're going to be smart enough to apologize or say this, and they're going to be like, but Trump said, oh, it's just locker room talk and moved on. Why are we going to apologize? Bill Maher has kind of been on this bandwagon, right, with the Democrats saying, let's not take Michelle's advice and go high when they go low. Let's go low, too, because here's what, man, and like you said, oh, it was only 90,000 votes. But here's the problem with her losing just 90,000 votes and having 3 million more. They don't have any power for 4 years. And all the craziness that Democrats hate is in control right now in Washington. So as great as maybe it was and that the Americans really wanted her and it's only 90,000 votes over these counties, it's 4 years. So that sucks. So do the Democrats need to be a little less, we'll go high when they go low?
Well, there's certainly a little bit of that. I mean, the Democrats are, of course, reassessing, you know, their sort of message. But I think you also have to remember that Donald Trump's approval ratings are in the toilet, and his numbers aren't just falling with Democrats and independents. So every time he loses a week of his presidency to scandal or to some stupid story or some tweet, he is not pushing his agenda. He's not advancing his agenda. He's not getting that wall built. He's not getting health care passed. You know, he's not. You know, it's taken him this long to get his Muslim ban in place, and it's only partially in place, and the courts still have to hear it. He has been a remarkably ineffective president. He's got you know, hundreds of seats that are still vacant in his administration, just because he hasn't gotten around to appointing them and getting them nominated and getting them approved. A certain candidate can get away with being a little more, maybe even vulgar, certainly a little more aggressive. But at the end of the day, this guy is proving to be kind of silly as a president in terms of, you know, getting his agenda pushed through. And that's not going to play well with his own voters. As the dominoes start to fall on this Russia investigation, on these, on these allegations about collusion, I don't see things going especially well for him. So as far as I'm concerned, what the Democrats need to do in 18 is figure out their message and then keep in mind that you can't just talk to big urban areas. You've got to talk to all the voters. You've got to talk to the ones in the rural areas who feel like they haven't heard a Democrat speak to them in 20 years. You've got to talk to, you know, suburban people the candidates assume that, you know, they're going to have these people because they're a certain demographic. We just got to remember to talk to people. And I think 18 is going to be a good time for Democrats.
Well, you know, you say, well, that's not going to play well with his voters. And Sonia, I feel like we can't say that. We don't know. He's going to, because what's going to happen is you're saying, well, he didn't get all these things done. He promised the voters. He's going to say, because of the media, because of the Democrats. I mean, he spins everything. He's very good. Always making it seem like he won.
He doesn't need a single Democratic vote. He does not need a single Democratic vote.
Yeah.
In the House. He absolutely does not. Like, him trying to blame this on Democrats.
Yeah,
is absolutely
that's wonderful.
And I'm going to help people remember that. You know, any Like, he can run on that, sure, but his Republican Party, the GOP, congressional Republicans, can't run on that.
Well,
Democratic obstruction, no.
That's the thing. The 2018 elections really will tell. Can mm-hmm. Democrats actually make a dent? Can Democrats get some control back? Sonia, we need to take a quick break in the news. Can we chat a little bit more about politics and also get an update on Mars?
Absolutely.
All right. Hold on 1 second. We'll be right back. Sonia Von Meter is a Democratic opposition researcher. She does politics. She also aspires to be one of the first people living on Mars. Probably aspires more than ever at this point in life, I would imagine, with how crazy things are right now. But we'll find out more about that. And President Trump actually made a big speech about space on Friday. And we're going to play a little bit of that for you when we come back from the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're speaking with Sonia Von Meter at Bourbon Face on Twitter. She's a Democratic opposition researcher. Do I say that right? Is it a Democratic opposition researcher or just an oppo researcher?
No, I think it's fair to say I'm a Democrat.
Okay. I just didn't know. You know, the check's clear from both sides, but do you ever work for Republicans, or are you just, you know, your politics are so to the one side that you just don't even bother working if they wanted to hire you? Because who better to hire if I was Republican? I wanted to make sure, you know, that people, you know, that I knew what was going to get found out. I'd want to hire somebody who really didn't want me in office, maybe to do the digging.
You know what? We have worked for Republicans in the past, but only in Republican primaries. We don't work for Republicans running against Democrats. But, you know, any Democrat, and, you know, we work nonpartisan races. Lord knows there's nonpartisan races all over the country. So, you know, it just depends on the client.
Do you work it all over the country, or is it mostly in Texas?
Oh, it's definitely all over the country. There's like 9 Democrats in Texas, man. I die of hunger.
I hadn't really thought that through, I guess. Good point. Good point. Okay, so let's jump back onto the bandwagon here a little bit about the politics. And you mentioned that, you know, what they have to do going into 2018. How are things looking right now? What do you think the Democrats are headed in the right direction? Do you think they're finding the right people? I know that there's a lot of buzz and there's a lot of heat going on, you know, as Donald Trump keeps having trouble avoiding scandal. But I think that, again, it's his people aren't feeling it the way everybody else is. Although, with his approval ratings being so low, you have to imagine that some of the people who voted for him aren't very happy. So there has to be some of that. Do you think Democrats right now are headed in the right direction?
You know, I think we are. I think it's still a little early. You know, we've only had, you know, what, 4 special elections since November, and the Republicans have taken them all. But there are some indicators that momentum is going to swing toward the Democrats. You know, look at what happened in Kansas and in Georgia in these special elections. The seats that had been won in November by, you know, double-digit margins are suddenly coming down to, you know, to just a few points. And the Republicans are having to spend millions and millions of dollars to defend these seats. You know, John Ossoff in Georgia, you know, mind you, it was one of the most expensive congressional race in history. But Price took that seat easily in November. And when Karen Handel took it, she had to spend, you know, $25 million to keep it. When 18 rolls around, they're not, the Republican Party isn't going to have millions and millions of dollars to spend on, you know, over 400 congressional seats. So I think things are definitely trending our way. That being said, Democrats need to hone their message, and they need to find the right candidates. You know, there was a lot of question about whether or not John Ossoff was the right candidate for that seat. So we've got some work to do.
Do the Democrats have the millions and millions of dollars they will need to fight for those seats?
Democratic fundraising is going very, very well right now across the country. We're seeing a lot of enthusiasm. It's not just the grassroots. People are donating. They're donating to causes. You know, one good headline means thousands of dollars for any particular candidate. Because of the way that social media works, and because of, you know, we live in the 24-hour news cycle, you get one good quote, you know, or bad quote, and all of a sudden your opponent is raking in the dollars because everybody either hates you or loves you. There's a lot of opportunity here if Democrats can capitalize on it.
What is your feeling on the people that were so upset about Bernie Sanders not getting the nomination that they didn't vote for Hillary, whether they voted for Trump or just didn't vote?
You know, I think there's a lot of that. I think that I'm not sure it made the difference. It may or may not have. And, you know, we're going to be looking at this kind of information, you know, this kind of data for the next several years, trying to figure out exactly what happened. But I think that lodging a protest vote for Trump or protesting by not showing up or voting for a third party, we're having to live with the repercussions of this now. And I know so many people who voted for Trump as a protest vote because everyone said, oh, no, Hillary's got this. It's in the bag. You know, there's never been a safer time to lodge a protest vote. You know, and now we're living with the ramifications of that vote. And, you know, people aren't happy. People aren't happy with what they're seeing. You know, the independents and the Democrats certainly aren't. And you know, more moderate Republicans who maybe stayed home or voted for Trump thinking, you know, it's fine, I can be loyal to my party and it won't make a difference, are having to come to terms with, you know, with the fact that our president is a mockery of leadership. So there's a lot going on, and you know, Democrats have a lot of work to do, certainly.
Yeah.
But I think things are, I think there's a lot of room for growth. But I think that the people who, you know, launch these third party protest votes are going to come around. I think they will see the error of their ways.
Okay, so Roger and I like to do this here once in a while. We talk about our predictions on the Trump presidency. My prediction is that he will not run for re-election because he will have accomplished his goals. America will be great again. Of course, this would be how he would spin it, right? He would say he did all these great things despite the historic this that I faced and the witch hunt and da 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 da. But my guess is that being a president is a kind of an annoying job. And when you're used to running a company and whatever you say is what people do, it's got to be very tough to suddenly take a job where you don't get to do that. Whatever you say doesn't necessarily happen. You've got to fight through all this stuff. And just at his age, and I think it's going to wear him out and be like, God, why do I want to do this for another 4 years? I think he'll drop out victorious, of course, and as one of the greatest presidents ever and everything that'll tell us. But I don't see the investigation's getting anywhere that we actually get to the level of impeachment, and I don't see him running for a second term because I think it's just too annoying to him to have to go through all of this. Where do you think things end? Where do you think we're at 4 years from now?
I think you're absolutely right that he has no interest in running for re-election. For him, it was about winning. It wasn't about being the president. It was about winning the presidency. He is not having any fun. You know, he's putting on weight. He's miserable, according to all of his aides. You know, this isn't the life that he wanted. He wanted to win because it was an ego boost, because it was a validation. And now he's done that. I think you're absolutely right. If he manages to survive this presidency, I don't think he runs for re-election. On the other hand, I've been wrong about him before. Maybe he decides that he wants to run because it would be more validation. And come his next term, he doesn't have to care as much. He just appoints people to make those decisions, and he lets, you know, his vice president basically won the show.
Yeah.
I don't know. On the other hand, here's what I do know. This Russia investigation isn't going anywhere. And it is my hypothesis that there is, in fact, fire where we're seeing all this smoke. If we are able to make enough inroads in the 2018 elections, I certainly don't think we'll bring impeachment before the midterm. But I think come 2019, we could be looking at a very, very different climate in this country. And I think the American people might start demanding some action on this. But we'll see, you know. I've been wrong about this before.
Sure. Speaking purely politically, do you think it's in the Democrats' interest to have him impeached? Because then you put Pence in office and give him a couple of years to possibly build some equity in the office and then run into, you know, if Trump's not going to run again, I don't think you want to give Pence a bunch of time of being president first, necessarily.
I don't think Pence survives this. I think that this goes a little deeper than most people imagine. I think that if and when Trump goes down, it won't just be him. It'll be him. It'll be, you know, a huge number of people in his cabinet. It'll be, you know, senior leadership in Congress. I mean, now that these dominoes are falling, I think we're ultimately going to see that it was not just Donald Trump. This was not just one man. obstruction, you know, involves a lot of players. And I think at the end of the day, we won't have a President Pence. We'll have like a President Orrin Hatch by the time all
the dust
settles. Yeah. So, I mean, let's, you know, we're still a long way away from that, you know, but these investigations aren't going anywhere. And I think that this is much bigger than most people realize.
Okay. I'm going to bet that, unfortunately, that you're wrong, that this goes nowhere, that they're going to have stuff on them, but it's not going to get anywhere.
The last time I made a bet on your show, I lost so abysmally. It's a miracle you ever wanted to have me back.
That's right. What was our bet? And you never paid up, by the way. What was our bet?
I forget. I just know
that
I lost.
Was it just Hillary winning, or was it something different?
No, it was Hillary winning a certain number of states, and I could not have been more wrong.
All right. Well, I won't hold your feet to the fire in this one, but you know what? We have a little audio for you. Your favorite current president, Donald Trump, spoke about space today, another favorite subject of yours. Jessica, can we hear a little bit of that? Go ahead, please.
Today, we're taking a crucial step to secure America's future in space by reviving the National Space Council after it has been dormant almost 25 years, if you can believe it. During the campaign, Vice President Pence promised that our administration, because Mike's very much into space, would revive the National Space Council. And with this executive order, we're keeping that promise. Feel very strongly about it. I felt strongly about it for a long time. I used to say, before doing what I did, I used to say, what happened? Why aren't we moving forward? Today's announcement sends a clear signal to the world that we are restoring America's proud legacy of leadership in space. Our vice president cares very deeply about space policy, and for good reason. Space exploration is not only essential to our character as a nation, but also our economy and our great nation's security. Our travels beyond the Earth propel scientific discoveries that improve our lives in countless ways here, right here at home, powering vast new industries, spurring incredible technology, and providing the space security we need to protect the American people. And security is going to be a very big factor with respect to space and space exploration. At some point in the future, we're going to look back and say, how did we do it without space?
How did we do it without space? So there are a couple of very interesting things in there. First of all, I love his Mike's very much into space. Like, he's just totally ripping on Pence. Like, all right, I got to be here because my geeky VP made a big deal about this. So Mike's very into space. And then at the end, when he's talking about space security, and we need space security to protect the American people, and we're going to look back someday and say, how did we do it without space?
I don't even know what he's talking about there.
It didn't seem like the astronauts behind him did either. They were kind of making faces like, what the hell's going on? They looked sort of like the G7 did when he was making that speech.
Yeah. The Buzz Aldrin expressions were truly magnificent. I'm pretty sure they were trending on Twitter about 10 minutes later. I couldn't tell you what in the world he was talking about. And for once, I can't even just blame it on the speechwriter. Like, I don't think he had any idea what he was trying to say either. I think it's a mockery of space leadership. It was word salad. It was word salad with the word space thrown in there about 15 times.
Yeah, it was. So what does the reigniting of the National Space Council mean? Do you have any idea? Have you looked into this at all?
I really don't, to tell you the truth. I do know that his budget is not friendly to NASA. Mm-hmm. This seems like, sort of a, what was that thing where he cut like something like millions and millions of dollars to like EPA funding and then donated his first quarter pay of like $70,000 to the EPA or something along those lines. This seems like a very, very, false, very hollow effort. And I would be astounded if anything actually came of this.
All right. So speaking of space, so the reason you and I first got to know each other was because you were in the news as being selected. It was the Mars One project. They were seeking candidates to fly to Mars when they launched their deal. They got it down to 100 people and you made the 100.
I did.
And it wasn't supposed to happen until like, when was the earliest this was going to happen? Mid 2020s?
Yeah, it's about 2025.
About 2025. And of course, like anything else, this is a billion and billion dollar project, and they need the funds mm-hmm. to try to keep it going. Where's the Mars One project standing today?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that the progress has been slowed a bit. All of the candidates are still in touch with the organization, and you know, progress is still being made. They're seeking their funding. They're moving forward with their plans. But things have been pushed back a little. As you might expect, finding billions of dollars for an endeavor of this size and this sort of significance isn't something that happens overnight. And I think they ran into some stumbling blocks early on that were, you know, expected. But we are assured by leadership that things are still underway. They're seeking alternate sources of funding at this point. They're exploring other avenues. But in the meantime, especially for someone like myself, you know, I got fish to fry on this planet. You know, I am always looking up and out, and I am grateful that private industry has taken up the mantle where NASA has sort of led the charge for the longest time. Now we've got organizations, Elon Musk and Richard Branson and the like, Jeff Bezos talking about, you know, what we're doing in space and what the next step for human exploration of space should look like. Mars One is still very much a part of all that. But, you know, there have been some stumbling blocks. And, sure. And in the meantime, I'm operating as though I will ultimately live and die on this planet. But that's not so bad, you know?
No, that's not so bad. Although it's funny, so, you know, you would think that you just got to find a few billionaires who are like, you know what, Mars doesn't sound so bad, and maybe they're in, and you'd think you'd get the funding more quickly now that the way that America's, you know, for half of us at least, turned in like the distress. Like, Mars sounded pretty good. How much, what's it going to cost us? Let's get some money together. Let's go.
Well, I'll tell you what I tell everybody else who asked me that question. You're all welcome, but the line starts behind me, all right?
Well, if I have $1 billion to contribute, guess who's skipping ahead of you in line?
All right, fine. I suppose we can make room on the rocket for you.
But and people don't remember this, Sonia, but the crazy part about the Mars One project is there was no return ticket. If you get to go, you're going to live out your life on Mars.
That was the deal. That is the deal. It absolutely is. And they did that for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's way cheaper, you know, not having to build all the materials that you need to launch something off of, you know, Mars. To get to escape Martian atmosphere, to escape Martian gravity and get all the way back to the Earth. Mm-hmm. It's a lot cheaper to do this as a one-way trip. But also, you know, that was sort of the initial design of the mission. There are going to be other organizations that want to go and come back. You know, I assume NASA and ESA are among those organizations, and for good reason. But this is about learning about sustainability. It's about learning about long-term effects of non-Earth atmosphere, non-Earth gravity on the human body. There are a lot of things that you can study with a one-way mission that aren't on the table for a mission that includes a return visit. So this is sort of by design. There are some concerns about this kind of plan, and I'm deeply grateful that Mars One has reached out to some of the best aerospace people in the world, some of the best scientists in the world, and gotten those people on their board. So this is a very carefully thought out and planned mission. But in the meantime, while they're putting together their funding, while they're getting all things organized, there's a lot of activity for the candidates to partake in while they're still on this planet. And Lord knows, as a political consultant here in the United States, I've got some work to do. So.
Yes, you do. It's a good time to be a political consultant, I would imagine, isn't it? Is it?
It is. One of the things I'm noticing is that Democratic candidates are sort of falling from the sky right now. Donald Trump has really galvanized my party. You know, we thought we had this in the bag, and so we took our eye off the ball a little bit. And now we're sort of looking up and realizing, oh, my God, what have we wrought on this planet? So here in Texas, where we haven't seen competitive congressional races in a lot of these districts in a long time, suddenly there are competitive primaries on the Democratic side of things. You know, people have woken up and they've realized that it's not enough just to turn out once every 4 years. You have to create the society that you want to live in. So Democrats are coming out of the woodwork. They're getting off the bench. And so, it is a good time to be a Democratic consultant. It's also a good time to be an experienced Democratic consultant. There are a lot of, sort of enthusiasts that are getting into the game. Some of them giving better advice than others. I encourage you, if you're looking for a run, if you're looking to get involved, talk to the professionals, talk to the people that have done this a time or two. And Lord knows we don't always get it right, but we do have experience with this kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a really exciting couple of years for you, and we'll keep talking. And the one other question, because people don't remember, you kind of became famous as the Mars One person also because you agreed because you would go and live out the rest of your life, but you're married. And so that that's an interesting conundrum because he don't get to go with. He's got to stay behind. And so you both had written about that and how that would work out and why you made those decisions. So I wonder now, because if you were my wife, Sonia, and we're around the house and I knew this was on the horizon, every time you annoyed me, I'm sure I would end up saying... is that thing ever going to take off or, do you think it's going to happen? I would totally tease you with that all the time. Does he like to use that on you?
No, he doesn't.
Really?
He's very
Come
supportive.
On.
Yeah, no, he's the best. He's the best.
I know he's the best. Of course he is, but you got to be annoying sometimes. Married couples get in each other's skin. And he doesn't tease you with the Mars thing? Like, can we pack it up and get going already? No? He doesn't do that?
No. You know what? I think it's a missed opportunity. I think maybe I should let him know.
Well, it's not going to be the same if you tell him what to tease you with. I'll send him an email. I'll help him out.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Sony Van Meter, she is a Democratic opposition researcher and a wonderful person, and hopefully someday a resident of the planet Mars. We'll see if it can ever work out. But Sonia, in a few months, I'd love to chat with you again as the races start heating up and we learn more about new candidates and things like that, okay?
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Thank you so much for staying up late. We really appreciate it. Have a great night, okay?
You too.
All right. Sonia, you follow her on Twitter at BourbonFace. She's wonderful. News is next on 720 WGN.
When the twilight is gone and no songbirds are singing. When the twilight is gone, you come into my heart. And here in my heart you will stay while I pray.
Pat Bubala here with you on KPKJ.
My prayer.
This is my music.
Hold on, Roger. Hold on.
This is the water. And this... is the well. Drink full and his hand. The horse is the white of the eyes and dark within. This is the water and this is the well. Drink full and his hand.
So, Raj, this was part of...
Wow.
People are calling.
Yeah.
At least some bloggers. Possibly one of the greatest hours of television ever. That was episode 8 of Twin Peaks.
Oh, I was waiting for an update.
So, it's Twin Peaks The Return. Twin Peaks, the show that was such a big hit in 1990 for a very short amount of time, is back. 18 hours... that David Lynch has said he's thinking of as an 18-hour film. It's not separate episodes, really. It all ties together. This episode was fascinating, brilliant, frustrating as hell. We're going along in the story, and suddenly, screen flashes. It's a distant shot, and it says... I think I can't remember the date for sure, but something like July 16th, 1945. It jumps back in time to 1945.
Even before the first series.
Well before the first series. First series took place in the 80s. Or late right. 80s, early 90s.
Right.
Jumps back to, I think it was July 16th, 1945, when White Sands, New Mexico.
Ooh.
Detonated the nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
For the first time. And that then seems to go on to tell the origin story of the evil within the show Twin Peaks. But so what we get is this incredibly interesting shot from the sky coming forward of the mushroom cloud and of the explosion. And the cinematography is incredible on this. But what happens is we kind of go into the mushroom cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then things happen. But we go into the mushroom cloud and we go into, I don't know how to describe what's going on. Radioactivity, electricity being disturbed, maybe atoms, all sorts of stuff. It's like 3 to 5 to 7 minutes of this. It goes on an inexplicably long time. It's very fascinating. Goes on for a very long time. To the point where you're watching this going, all right, what the hell already? And that's what I was thinking at first when I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then you try, if you're a fan of the show and if you're a fan of David Lynch, you try to say, why did he do this? Everything must have a meaning here.
Right.
And maybe it was, well, we had so much time in the show, so we thought we'd keep a few more minutes of that. But I like to think that it was, he really wanted you to be disturbed and sort of annoyed or agitated.
Sure.
At watching what you were watching. So it drug on for this very long time.
Mm.
Trent Reznor, the lead singer of Nine Inch Nails. Nine Inch Nails was in this episode performing at the bar in Twin Peaks. They played a full song, like 5 minutes.
Wow. That's another way to stretch things out.
Yeah, I guess. And I want to think it had meaning. But I was like, Jesus, are we seriously going to 5 whole minutes on a song? It really was. I've watched it 2 separate times already. Rewatched it.
Okay.
And it is, it's fascinating. It really is fascinating. He is out there. And it's funny, like some of the reviews I've been reading talked about how people were worried when the show came back that, you know, a lot of shows are gone for a long time and now they're coming back, Will and Grace, whatever, all these different shows. And are you going to ruin the specialness of the original show? Are you going to be, oh, God, you know, is it going to be Godfather 3, I guess? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Twin Peaks was so weird and wonderful at the time it came out because there was nothing like it on television. Nothing.
Right.
And now there has been Lost and like all these other shows that really followed in the footsteps that Twin Peaks opened a door for.
True.
To what you can do on television. But now everybody does that. And there's all these niche channels and they'll let you
know. Yeah, but nobody does it like he does it.
Well, sure. Necessarily. But they've done those things, right?
Right, yeah.
So there was a concern that, you know, it's not going to be groundbreaking. It's not going to be this. It's not going to be that. This episode is nothing you have ever seen on television before. And maybe you're like, yeah, and there's a reason for that. Nick DiGilio actually had a pretty funny post on Facebook this week after he watched it. He wrote, somewhere in suburbia, husband around 9:20 p.m. Hey, honey, let's see what's on Showtime. Okay. 20 minutes later, let's cancel Showtime. Yes, let's. Because people are, I'm sure there were people that are just like, oh my God. And Colleen was as we were watching it. Yeah. In fact, we got about halfway through it and I stopped it and I said, we're watching Veep because she loves Veep on HBO. We're watching Veep. I'm coming back to this later. My buddy Jim, whose wife has been watching it with him, we're very much, we watched it in college. We're very, so excited that this is back and really into it and talk about it incessantly. He told his wife she's not allowed to watch it with him anymore.
Because why not?
Because if you're not into it, mm-hmm. you are asking a million questions and you're getting annoyed. And like Colin will say, yeah. Can we just fast forward this part? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We're going to suffer through it. No. We're going to watch it. So it gets very frustrating when you're trying to get into something and really, and then, you know, somebody else in the room is like, why is this? Why is that? Why are they doing this? Oh, please. You know, it drives you insane. So Jim has banished his wife from getting to watch a show with him at all.
Wow.
Yeah. And I know you don't have Showtime, so you're not watching it.
But I do get it on Amazon Prime.
You get the
it's
old...
It's available. No.
The new one?
The new one's on Amazon Prime. You got to pay for it. You got to pay.
You got to rent each episode?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
How much is that?
Well, that's what I'm doing with Doctor Who.
How much is that?
Well, Doctor Who's like $2 an episode.
Do you know what these Twin Peaks are?
I'll have to look it up.
You
Welcome to my library.
You got to see this thing. It's something else.
Yeah. I'm way behind on it. I'm way behind on a lot of my TV viewing because, you know, we've talked about this before. I just don't find that much worthwhile on TV anymore.
I understand. So. Which is funny because there is more worthwhile on TV than at any point in our lifetimes.
Well, there's more of it. That's what I'm saying.
More worthwhile. I will tell you this, Roger, is the golden age of television. Mm-hmm. It is. If you look at the last 10 years, mm-hmm. from The Sopranos on, the things that have been out there, and the things that are out there right now, The Handmaid's Tale that everybody's going on and on about, Orange is the New Black, House of Cards. I mean, there are so many shows on the non-traditional networks that are really high-quality programming. Because there's all these little networks and they need some attention. So what do they need? They need an award. So they're putting money into really high quality programming. Mm-hmm. And the somebody tweeted this last week after this episode, like, kudos to whoever at Showtime said, yes, I'm willing to pay for this.
Yeah.
Because there's no network meeting where you explain what happens in this episode and people go, yes, we'll pay for that. No, because Showtime. And it's interesting, there have been articles, I think I've talked about this a little bit, there have been articles about ratings, because the ratings on this, if you look at the first night, Sunday night ratings, they're abysmal, like 600,000 people. It's not good at all for what it should be. But there was an article about how Twin Peaks is sort of helping rewrite the rules for Showtime, because Showtime bought into the Twin Peaks thing hoping people would subscribe. Because that's their, they don't have advertisers. They need subscribers, people willing to pay the money. I have subscribed to Showtime right now, which we've never had before in my life because I want this show. Now, there's not 100,000 people doing that or a million people doing that as they might want, or millions of people, but there's people doing it. And they found that even though there's 600,000 people watching it the first time through, subsequent viewings, DVRings, all those other ways that people watch it now, other devices, gets them up to over 3 million views each week. And that's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is doing is driving people to their other platforms, things like that. So in the end, it might actually end up being worthwhile for them. Although I can't imagine what they had to spend on this. David Lynch really got away with this because it looks expensively produced. The sets, the cinematography, the special effects, everything looks like they spent some cash on this. So kudos to Showtime for having the faith in David Lynch. And I'm telling you, people, if you get a chance to watch this thing, even if you never watched the original series, and I always thought there's no way to watch this if you haven't watched the original series, but the way he's doing it, he's shown little bits of flashbacks mm-hmm. from the original show to try to help you kind of see where it was and where it's going. I don't know. Oh, God, I'm getting yelled at. The grammar police are out.
Why?
When will people get it? Drug is not the past tense of drag. It's dragged. I said drugged. I said, did I say he drug him? I don't know. Somebody was dragged. I said it wrong. I apologize. I'm sorry about that. Are you gonna
Bear with me.
Are you going to look that up, Mr.
Yes.
Librarian?
Yes, I am.
Oh, right.
See, we can watch Sherlock. We can watch Doctor Who.
But you're paying for all of those?
Well, you got to, yeah.
Well,
of course.
Sucks.
Well, there's a lot of good stuff that is on that goes
with it.
Right. Like I can watch all the Mission Impossible. I can watch a lot of documentaries. First World War I can watch. Let's see. What is...
No, you can't get anything.
Twin Peaks, the original, you can watch.
Do you have to rent that?
No. Twin Peaks is, let's see here. Well, there's several different seasons, right?
Only two.
Well,
original came and went very quickly.
Season one is Prime and season two is Prime.
And season three is for rental. That's the new one.
This is just watching. This only has the original. They would list the new one separately. They wouldn't make it as season three under the old one. So it'll take me some time to find this, but I'm sure it's on there.
And you're sure season three is available for?
Well, that's what I've got to look for, and they don't make it easy to find this stuff, unfortunately, because when you look in it, it's a Amazon Prime, so everything they list is part of the Prime package, which means you pay your annual fee and these shows are free, the movies and the show. So when you go online to look, like I am now, all it shows you is the prime stuff. I have to do some digging to find the regular stuff, the stuff you have to pay extra for.
Right.
Yeah. If I'm at home and on Prime on my Roku, then I can search everything. That's not a problem.
Now, with your Roku, do you use more than Prime? Are there other things you could get through the Roku?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've got, we can get Netflix. We can get Hulu. We can get.
But you don't. You don't pay for any of those?
Well, our daughter has Netflix.
Okay.
And I think our son signed up for Hulu, so that's on there.
Have you watched Making a Murderer yet?
No, no. I know about it, but I've never watched
you
it.
You should watch that.
Okay. I see, now you're giving me a watch list. I mean, well, I got to watch this stuff.
Making a Murderer is only like 6 or 8 hours, I think. It's not that bad. I think.
Is it just the one?
Just one season. They're making another season of it. Okay. And it's still in the news.
Right. The guy just got off again
or something like that.
Yeah.
But they're still holding him because I think they can hold him until they decide if they want to retry him.
But
he should be getting released, and they are making a second season of that.
Okay.
And I'd love for you to watch it because I want your opinion, because Colleen is so convinced that this guy is innocent, and I am not. I think that the police did railroad him,
mm-hmm.
and the police did a bad job and probably did some illegal things, but I think it's because they think he really did it, and they wanted it to stick. And I'm thinking there's a decent chance he did do it, but...
Twin Peaks: The Return.
That's it.
Season one. There it is.
How much to rent?
Hold on. Watch with Showtime. Start your 7-day free trial. Or
so if you're a subscriber to Showtime, you can watch for free there.
How many episodes?
There's 8 so far.
6, 7.
Only 10.
8, and then there's bonus. There's 3 bonuses. Here it is, bonus 103, what you need to know about seasons 1 and 2 of Twin Peaks.
Oh, there you go. So a little recapper.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good idea.
Then Something Old is New Again, bonus 102. Twin Peaks, the 18-hour limited event series, will debut with 2-hour premiere Sunday. So it's kind of a preview there.
How much does it cost to rent an episode?
It says you got to watch with Showtime, so I'd have to subscribe, but it's available through Amazon. Included with Showtime on Amazon for $8.99 a month after trial.
Oh, there you go.
So watch which. So I could watch it now for a free 7-day trial on Showtime for free.
If you remember to cancel after.
Yeah, right.
But if you got 7 days, you could catch up on the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I got so much to do.
What do you got to do?
You don't have enough time for me to list what I got to do. By the way, check your Facebook.
Okay.
I did a jib-jab of you and me for the 4th of July with George Washington. We rap.
We do?
Yes.
Did you write the rap?
No, I did not. I used theirs.
Oh, my God. Okay. I will check that out. That sounds worthwhile. And weird.
You wear a wig.
I do.
Yes.
And you?
Yes, I do.
Are they the good powder wigs?
Like yes, they are. Georgia yeah. Sun? Yours has a few more curls.
Too funny. You're such a Roger. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've got more to do. 312-981-7200. Give us a call. 720-WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. Texter, I was just speaking about, what was it called? Making a Murderer, that was a hit Netflix documentary. God, I think it was almost 2 years ago now. And Brendan Dassey, so Stephen Avery's the main character on the show. The way it starts out is, I think they were following him because it was part of like a Wisconsin Innocence Project where they were taking on certain cases and helping out with lawyers and things like that. And Stephen Avery had been sent to prison, I think for a rape and a sexual assault. And I don't think it was for a murder. And it was a very interesting look at the justice system because a woman identified him. Police, all these things fell into place. He went to jail. DNA evidence proved it was not him. it was somebody else. So, and then they look back at what happened in the case where people had actually called the police saying, you should be looking into this one guy on this attack. You should be da da da. And just the way everything was done so wrong, it ended up being this other guy that people tried to point the police to that the police just ignored. No, we've got the person who did it. And they just ignored it. So they, I think the police felt he was a bad person. There's in the documentary, they show some things about Stephen Avery that show he didn't lead the cleanest life and wasn't necessarily the best grade A person. But he gets freed. And then I don't know how much longer later, but somebody is murdered who was last seen on their property, on his property. Their remains end up in his fire pit out in his front yard. They have this huge property in a salvage yard where all the family lives in different little sort of mobile homes. And so then it's all about what happens to him there. And it looks again possibly like he was framed because the way the case is set up and all this evidence and he murdered her in the garage. You look at this garage, it's this huge, ridiculously messy garage. But they're saying somebody was murdered in there and then he cleaned it all up. And just looking at the garage, it doesn't pass the sniff test. You're like, there's no way he cleaned up blood spatter and all this thing in this garage that has just crap everywhere. His nephew, Brendan, gets kind of railroaded by the police into a confession. Brendan is a special needs young boy. He's like 16 or 17 at the time. But he's like in high school, but at a fourth grade level and everything at best. And easily confused, doesn't understand what he's saying. They get him to repeat things. They have video of his public defender. His public defender hires like a sort of a, I don't know if it's a private eye or somebody to talk to him and really try to find out what's going on. The guy on videotape coerces him into confessing to all this stuff. Like, Brendan, what happened that night? Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. I was at home. No, you were at Steven's house, weren't you? You were,
oh,
Brendan.
No.
And like just talks him into everything and signing this thing. It's insane. So what happened recently was that got thrown out. And then they had time to appeal and they appealed. And they lost their appeal. And now Brendan is still being held like a year after his conviction was first kind of overturned because now they're debating whether they want to retry him. And it's sad. This kid, I think, has spent like the last 7 to 10 years in prison.
Good Lord.
And I guess there's a possibility he had something to do with this, but you look at the evidence they had in this documentary, it's insane how bad it looks now. And I know there's editors making this documentary their way.
Right.
So there's always question about the bias they have or they showed, but the video evidence is damning, at least on the nephew, whether or not Stephen committed his crime. But and it's interesting, Colleen's take on it the whole time, because she's so convinced of Stephen Avery's innocence, is if you were in jail for 15 years, I think it was how long it was the first time, for a crime you didn't commit, you wouldn't come out and then commit some crime like this. You just wouldn't do it. I'm not so convinced.
Well, everyone's capable of anything.
Right.
And, you know, given the chance or the conditions or whatever. Just from your description, and I'm sure from watching the documentary, personally, I wouldn't know anything about this guy unless I actually met him personally, in you know, up front and talked to him and tried to figure out who he is and what he is and what he's about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and I don't know, that seems so weird.
You got to watch it. You got to take some time to watch it.
My
Get
list
it on
is,
the list. Come on, Roger.
Put it on my
put
watch
up at the
list.
Top.
All right.
Move
Orange,
it up.
Orange is the New Black. I got to do Veep. People are talking to me about that. I watched part of the first episode of Veep.
Of the very first episode?
Yeah.
So Veep is a can be an acquired taste. Veep is so vulgar. It's amazing. I mean, it is the vulgarest comedy I know of. And I'm sure there's others that are much worse.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny how bad it is that it's the president or vice president of the United States saying such vile things to people. So it might catch you off guard a little bit at first.
Yeah.
I don't remember the early episodes.
Well, the early episode wasn't vile, but it was so dysfunctional.
Yeah, well, that's...
Excuse me. And I have I have an issue with dysfunctional TV shows and movies. It's something I don't feel comfortable watching. I just don't like it. It's not my cup of tea.
My guess is you're going to have real trouble with Veep then.
Yeah, I did. I only got about maybe three quarters of the way through it, and I said, it's not something
for
me.
There you go. Yeah. That gives you more time for making a murder. All right, it's 4:34 in the morning. What are we doing? Let's check the news headlines. Here's Roger. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Orion Samuelson coming up with the morning show in a little bit. I'm sure I'll have some Max Armstrong in there as well, you rascal. Mike Stevens are setting up for the Mike Stevens Show this morning for Outside the Loop Radio. A lot of microphones in here. There must be a live performance. So that's exciting.
Ooh, wow. The lights are on.
Yeah, Bobby had to turn the lights on so he could start setting things up.
Oh, okay.
Blinded. Blinded, I tell you. Thank
Blinded
you.
By
Thank
the light? You. Yeah, it's a good title for a song.
Nah, never make it.
Even though the one you just played? One of my favorites.
Little John Mellencamp. Was that some Jack and Diane? I think that was, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
That was a good
little
song.
Little ditty still about Jack song. And Diane.
All right, text about making a murderer, 847 says, innocent until proven guilty, Matt. Those cops are crooked. When the police force is framing people, we have a big problem. You think this is the first guy that department did that to? Come on! Well, yeah. I mean, the police look so crooked in this, it's ridiculous. But I do wonder, in times like that, when we see police officer do something like that, my hope is, even though it's still wrong, that they know that this man committed this crime, but he's about to get away with it. And so they'll move a little evidence, they'll plan it so they can find it, different things like that. I would imagine are used. I would think different tactics like that are used, unfortunately, from time to time. Not that they think they're framing the wrong guy. They think this is the guy.
Yeah.
But we don't have the evidence. He did a good job. He covered up. He did this or he did that. Wouldn't we just,
Well, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on every police department to, especially if they have such a preponderance of crime, to solve the crime. It takes a lot of man hours.
Yeah.
To gather the evidence, to piece it together, and come up with the solution to the problem, like the problem being who done it. You know, it's some are easy, some are hard. I give them some, not wide berth, but I give them a berth to be able to try to find all the evidence possible and not make a mistake.
All right, I'm trying to pull up this Facebook post that you have of us, but it's not working.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Yep.
So this is, it starts out with George Washington, you and I, in our three-pointed hats? Try something or other? Call the library, ask them.
Okay.
you have a powdered wig. Yours is curly and long. Mine's a little more up. I have a red jacket on with frills on the sleeves. You have a gray jacket with frills on the sleeves. And at various times, George Washington starts, then Ben Franklin, and then Thomas Jefferson join in. And this is the Founding Fathers rap on Jib Jab. Here we go.
Jib Jab!
Here we go.
And here are the three of us. George is getting into it.
They call me the general. I don't mean to be crass. I'm going to take it to the limit because it's time to kick some red ass.
The king, the royal.
That's
the
you and me.
I'll kick it to him like a macho Camacho.
See, he's got the blues. He's with the power of the air.
He tried to catch me, but you couldn't because I shifted into fifth gear.
We'll rise above. We're back to the transcendence.
Shout it out. We declare our independence.
Yeah.
And you're jumping up, waving your hands in the air
like
you just don't care.
You have to add in some adjectives and some words and stuff like that, and then it makes the song?
No, the song is there.
The song is already made.
All you do is add the faces.
Hmm.
Yeah, and you're bouncing up there, waving your hands up in the air, and You called him the head honcho, and it's cute.
It sounds cute.
Yeah.
And thank you, Roger, for doing that. It's very sweet of you.
Yeah, I have a lot of time on my hands.
Special birthday surprise for who? Jesse just said special birthday surprise for me. My birthday is nowhere near. No, it's nowhere near my birthday. We're half a year away. Roger's birthday was like last week.
A week ago, yeah.
Yeah. No, we're way off on me. I got time. I don't need to get any older.
Don't rush it.
Please. Not anymore.
He's already body making weird noises when he stands up.
I hurt myself playing hockey again this week.
You
too.
Did.
I did. I fell on my shoulder that I haven't had surgery on. Ouch. And I can't turn it over to look at my watch.
Oh, no.
It hurts. I kind of have to.
Your left arm?
Yeah.
And that's where they think rotator cuff tear is.
That's what I had on the other one. Yeah. I had that surgery.
How did that's it go? Because I may need it.
It went fine, but you're in a sling for 6 weeks or more.
Yeah, crap.
Yeah. So that was annoying.
Yeah. Mine's aggravated by the problem I have in my neck right now.
Who's aggravating your neck?
It's the growth of the C5 and 6 mm-hmm. of the spine. It's growing inward and pinching the spinal column.
Well, that should change that.
That's going to need surgery, too.
Ugh,
yep.
God. We got new insurance this year.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I love President Obama. I did. I love President Obama. Mm-hmm. I would vote for him again and again and again. Obamacare needed help.
Yeah.
And, you know, Donald Trump is hell-bent on getting rid of it, and it is flawed, but I'd like to see it fixed. When I left the Tribune Company, I had to buy my own insurance because I have my own company, right? But I wanted us to have really good insurance just like we had here. So went to Blue Cross mm-hmm. and tried to find the absolute closest thing I could to what we have here. So I had a low deductible, like $500, $3,500 out-of-pocket maximum.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the year was, but something, I mean, it was really good. The prices over the last 5 or 6 years have gone just through the roof.
Yeah.
Through the roof. And to the point where coming into this year, it was going to cost us, I think, $2,400 every month for our insurance.
For the company or the family?
For the family.
Family, okay.
For the family. And when we started out 10 years ago, it was $1,200 a month.
Wow.
So it was going to cost me, you know, $30,000 a year for the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally said, you know, we just can't do this.
Yeah.
So I called an agent who helped out. And now we have Blue Cross, Blue Shield still service for, I think, 14 to 16, I forget what it is, $1,600 a month. So a savings of almost $1,000 a month, that mm-hmm. adds up.
Yeah.
But now our deductible went from $500 to, I think, $6,500.
Jeez. You save the money, but you're not
saving
the money.
As long as we stay healthy.
Right.
We stay really healthy, I save the money.
Yeah.
As far as the out-of-pocket maximum.
Yeah.
Used to be $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
It's $14,000 now.
Wait, say that again?
So
what?
You have an out-of-pocket maximum, you'll pay for your insurance for a year, like with your co-pays mm-hmm. and whatever you still owe after what, blah, blah, blah. The maximum we would have to pay in that used to be $4,500.
Right.
If we had spent that, then everything else is paid for by insurance for the rest of the year. The new policy that totals like $14,000 or $17,000.
Gee, money.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's frustrating.
Well, I think I got a story that tops that.
Oh, please do.
Not necessarily, but in a different vein.
Okay.
So my doctor wants me to get the MRI on my left shoulder. Now, I had one done about 4 years ago, but then they found cancer, and so we kind of forgot about the shoulder.
I would think.
So we need a new one.
Shoulder or doctor?
A shoulder.
Okay.
MRI. So my doctor's office calls this. I have Blue Cross Blue Shield, but there's a company in between that authorizes things.
Okay.
So two things. One, in my physical therapy, this company that authorizes things says that the number on my Medicare card that was sent to me by my Blue Cross Blue Shield is not the same number they have for me in their records.
Okay.
Second one. To order the MRI, my doctor was told by this company that authorizes things that I can go to, and they gave him a certain address. And my doctor's office looked up the address for an MRI, Walgreens.
You're supposed to get an MRI at Walgreens? You're
supposed to. They said, oh, he can go to Walgreens. You can go over here. Here's the address.
Do they have MRIs?
No, they don't have MRIs at Walgreens.
I was going to say, what a thing to add.
No, but they are insistent. They will not approve any other site. I have to go to Walgreens for the MRI.
Have you walked into Walgreens and said, hey, I just want to make sure. Doctor wants me to get the MRI here. Are you guys doing something?
I've been there more than enough times.
Maybe there's their back alley MRI.
Yeah, we got it down in the basement.
That's bad enough. So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I'm still waiting for the MRI to get approved. Because
for it to get approved at Walgreens, you're going to be in trouble.
Right. What is it?
Out of network.
Out of network. I can go out of network, but it'll cost me like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So...
That's no way to make a living, sir.
No.
No way to spend everything you earn, I guess.
Yeah, I can always chop off the left arm because I got a good right arm.
Yeah.
I already got one. Who needs two?
Who? Nobody, that's who. Wusses, Raj. Of course, writing that news with one hand is going to take you a little longer.
You know, I can type real fast with my right hand.
Can you? Just with one hand?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. If you have a call or comment, 312-981-7200. We're going to check in with Orion on the morning show as well. That's all coming up here on 720 WGN. There you go, a little John Mellencamp. Start your day off. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bavala with you for a few more minutes here on 720 WGN. We want to wish all of you a safe and very happy and respectful 4th of July. Let's remember all of our veterans who are out there serving and have served in the past. I know that that's more of a Memorial Day thing, but if we're celebrating our independence, you can't do that without thinking about the people who serve the country and all the great things that they do.
That's one of the things we do at the Skokie 4th of July parade. The stars really are the veterans that we specifically to appear in the parade, and we put them on their poster. We have two World War II veterans and an Afghanistan War veteran.
Cool.
Who will be special marshals of the parade.
When is the parade?
Tuesday at noon in Skokie. It starts at Oakton Community College on Lincoln, goes to Oakton, and then goes east on Oakton to the park.
That sounds like a good time. I'll be and down. Patty will be there.
Patty will be there. She'll be in the up front float because then she has to run up to Evanston, which starts at 2 o'clock for their parade. I will be at the VIP tent at the end and being the MC for the third year in a row.
Sounds like a good time. Everybody come out and support a good cause. By the way, so Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Okay.
They had, I know, tough segue. They had twins recently.
Right.
It was a big deal.
Right.
TMZ has the names.
I thought we already knew them. No?
Did we? I thought this was relatively new.
Maybe it's new.
Rumi and Sir Carter.
Rumi as in R-O-O-M-I-E? Like he's Rumi. My Rumi?
Rumi is an R-U-M-I.
R-U-M-Y.
I.
But you would say it Rummy. Rumi, okay. And what's the other one? Sir Lancelot?
No, Sir, and then their last name is Carter.
Oh.
So okay. Rumi and Sir. I mean, there's a way to get some respect. Just name your kid Sir.
Yeah.
Sir, yes. All his life.
Sir, stop picking your nose, please.
Yeah, well, that doesn't sound as good. TMZ says the name Rumi appears to be an homage to a 13th century Persian poet by that name. And Sir happens to be referenced in one of his most famous poems. Bring the pure wine of love and freedom, but Sir or tornado is coming. More wine will teach this storm a thing or two about whirling. Okay. So TMZ found out about the names because they trademarked them.
Oh.
They have a company that also filed for a trademark for their other daughter, Blue Ivy. And the trademarks are for fragrances, cosmetics, keychains, baby teething rings, strollers, mugs, water bottles, hair ribbons, playing cards, tote bags, sports balls, rattles, and novelty items.
So when I fill out an application online and they want to know my my salutation, I can't use Sir.
You can. When he does it, he'll be Sir. And that gets weird. With apologies to the wonderful Orion Samuelson on that bad joke as we lead into him.